Nice to see you. To see you.
Nice.
Turn to somebody near to you and say you're looking pretty hot today. Now try and convince them that you really meant that. If you'd been in the madness that was going on in our flat that night, you'd have heard her say it for yourself. Our flat was on the Bullrings in Hume in Moss Side. Raise your hand if you've been through Moss Side. It's a really nice place. And I spent ages doing it up so that it was like a nightclub for two. A bespoke club for my girlfriend and me, you should have seen it. The windows were boarded over, so the place was pitch black. We never had the big light on, we just had two spotlights on, a red one on the wall and a green one shining up from the floor. We had a psychedelic oil machine that projected patterns all across the room. I had a little home recording studio set up, and I had two massive speakers that I'd made from kitchen worktops. The crowds would be in the madness that was kicking off a mile down the road in the Hacienda nightclub, and we'd be in the madness in our bespoke nightclub for two, 24/7. I've been whizzing off my head on amphetamines for months. I hadn't slept. You should have seen me. I looked like a space cadet on acid wearing a shell suit. Then one night, I thought I heard somebody shouting across from another block. I knew three lads that lived in the corner flat on the top floor in a squat. I thought it was them. I said, "Lise, did you hear them shouting across then, love?" "No, I didn't." "I heard them again." "Did you hear them that time, Lisa?" "No, I didn't, Barry." So I went to the balcony door, opened it, looked across and thought, "There they are, they're at the window." "Right, that's it." So I grabbed my pickaxe handle from next to the door like you do. Steamed out, ran to the top floor, legged it across the walkway to their block. I climbed on the handrail so I could reach the side window, and I smashed it in with my pickaxe handle. "Ch-ch-ch, I know you're in there." "Ch-ch-ch," shouting across at me. I smashed all the glass out, lifted myself up and looked in. The flat was completely empty. There was nobody there. "Where have they gone?" I jumped down from the rail, legged it back down to the flat. I said, "Lisa, there was nobody there. Did you tell them I was coming?" I sat back down on my pub stool that I'd cut the legs off to make it look oriental. And with my head sandwiched between my two massive speakers, I turned the house music right up. My girlfriend smiled, and that's when she said it. "Just another day in the madness, innit?" Do you know, it's not just me who's been in the madness. See, each of us in this room have been in the madness of some kind at some point on our journey. Question is, what can we learn from it? Here are four lessons for you to take away. Number one, in the madness, you can find strength for your struggle. If you could meet my mate Paul Innes, you'd like him. Paul is big, he's Scottish, and he's always having a laugh. Paul's the kind of guy that when he walks into the room, everybody knows that he's there. Raise your hand if you've met somebody like that. Paul was brought up in a good home in the northeast of Scotland. But when he was a kid, he started to smoke cannabis, take amphetamines, and use MDMA. Then as he got older, he got into heroin. Paul would spend his weekends in the madness that was happening in the rave scene. By now, the madness that had started in Manchester and London had spread. It was all over the UK. But fashion had changed. They'd moved on from blowing whistles to sucking giant babies' dummies. Straight up. They wasn't wearing bucket hats anymore. Now, they was wearing fluorescent green hot pants. And that wasn't just the girls. Even the lads from the council estates were wearing them. That was ecstasy for you. This was living it large, Kevin and Perry, go large style here. In it. Paul started to go into a cafe in Fraserburgh town centre. That's where he met Ben. Ben was a Christian guy that ran it. One day, Paul went out on a bender with a friend and he overdosed. And he woke up in Aberdeen Hospital, all bug-eyed, and Ben was sat next to his bed. Somebody had rang him. Ben said, "You're lucky to be alive." And then he said, "Paul, have you had enough?" Paul said, "Aye, I've had enough." Ben prayed that God would help Paul. And over the next 2 days, while he was lay in his hospital bed, Paul started to think about the different things that he'd had enough of. "I've had enough of hurting people. I've had enough of waking up withdrawing every day. I've had enough of having to try and find money to buy drugs. I've had enough." He picked up his phone and he texted Ben. He said, "Ben, I've been thinking and I've definitely had enough." Soon after, Paul became a Christian and he ended up running the Solid Rock Cafe for 10 years. And now Paul is a prison chaplain. See, in the madness, Paul found strength for his struggle. Way, way back in Bible times, there was a guy on the scene called David. He often lived in the madness, but he knew that he could find his strength there. He said this, speaking from experience: "God is a helper and strength, and ready to help us in times of trouble." See, in the madness, you can find strength for your struggle. What about you? Are you in some kind of madness right now? Maybe you've been hurt and it's knocked you for six. Maybe you're in a bad place and you can't see a way out. Maybe you've landed into some trouble recently and you feel that you can't cope. Listen, listen, listen. Whatever kind of madness you may be in, you need to know that God is there and that he can give you the strength that you need. See, in the madness, you can find strength for your struggle, but have you had enough? My girlfriend smiled, and that's when she said it, "Just another day in the madness, innit?" In the madness, you can find strength for your struggle. Number two, in the madness, you can tap into abilities that are usable. When I was in the madness in Manchester, I had my little home recording studio set up and those two massive speakers that I'd made at our kitchen worktops when we lived in our bespoke nightclub for two. And then after that, I got some Technics turntables so I could learn how to DJ. If you'd been there, you'd have seen me. I practiced and practiced and practiced and practiced. And then one day, after lots of practice, I finally mastered the art of being able to mix in time a waka wong and in key a chocka chong every time. I was buzzing. That was when I tapped into that ability. And then 9 years later, I realized that that ability was still usable. I'd given God consent to come in, and I'd gone off to Cliff Bible College. One of the staff members there was Andy Smith. You can read more about Andy in my book, and it just so happens that I've got some with me today. I mentioned last year when my book Once an Addict came out in 2007, I said to my trustees, "I want to give a copy of Once an Addict to every prisoner in the country." Right now, there's 84,000 prisoners behind bars. Well, actually, it's the whole of the UK, not just the whole of one country. It's the whole of the United Kingdom. 84,000 prisoners behind bars. To date, we've sent 45,000 copies of Once an Addict out free of charge. And there's one small way that you can support that. For every one copy of Once an Addict you buy today at the table, we then send two into prisons for free. So you're buying three. You're buying one for you and two for prisoners. And also, there's some other bits on that table, CDs and DVDs. All the proceeds that come in through the through that table going to our charity, and they help us do our prisons work, because we don't get any funding, hardly, for our prisons work. So that's just one small way you can make a contribution to what we do. But Andy, he was quirky, he was creative, and he was into house music. I found this out when I went round to his flat. I hadn't mixed music for years. It was my first week at college, and Andy invited me around to his gaff. I walked through the door, and there was a pair of Technics set up in the corner. You should have seen my face. Andy, can I have a go at your decks, mate? Of course you can. So I turned them on, I put two tunes on, and I was still able to mix in time a waka wong, and in key a chocka chong every time. He said, mate, can you mix? I said, yeah. I was into it back in the day when I was in the madness in Manchester. He said, listen, why don't you get into it again? Because God can take that ability from your past and make use of it. It's still usable. See, with God on your case, it can be used for good. That's when I realized. So I bought some more decks. And I started to collect vinyl again. I found one LP in a second-hand shop that had Martin Luther King talks on it. And I started to DJ at outreach events in churches and universities. And then I took teams to Ibiza or B4. See, in the madness, you can tap into abilities that are usable. If you'd have been on the streets in San Antonio, in Ibiza, in 2000 and 2001, you'd have seen it. We had an artist on the team with us who was painting. We had breakdancers with us who were breakdancing. I'd be DJing away on the streets. Clubbers would be dancing away. And then I'd drop my favourite Martin Luther King sample. I've come back to tell you that you are a somebody, a waka wong, a chocka chong. See, I tapped into that ability years before in the madness that was kicking off in Manchester, and now with God on my case, I was using it to reach out to clubbers. See, in the madness, you can tap into abilities that are usable. What about you? What abilities have you tapped into in the madness that's gone on in your life? Did you tap into some sort of talent when you were young that you've not been using because something bad happened to you? Did you tap into some sort of skill in that job that went wrong? Did you tap into something when you were ducking and a diving and a wheeling and a dealing like me? Oh, waka wong chocka chong. Listen, those abilities that you tapped into are still usable. Because with God on your case, they can be used for good. There's a guy in the Bible called Paul. He said, everything works together for good. Because with God, nothing is wasted. See, in the madness, you can tap into abilities that are usable. But have you had enough? My girlfriend smiled, and that's when she said it. Just another day in the madness, innit? In the madness, you can find strength for your struggle. In the madness, you can tap into abilities that are usable. And number three, in the madness, you can take stock of yourself. The online dictionary says to take stock is to carefully consider a situation and form an opinion about it so that you can decide what to do. And I've learned that it's often in the madness when people take stock of themselves. I saw my dad do this 10 years ago. If you'd been around our house when I was a kid, you'd have seen what kind of dad my dad was. My dad was the kingpin of our family. Well, he thought he was. He was the head of the house, but my mum was the net because she told him which way to turn. He wore the trousers, but my mum told him which ones to wear. Sound familiar? But he was the kingpin of our family when we was kids. He was like Marlon Brando in the film The Godfather to us. Who remembers The Godfather? He'd sit in his armchair with his tracky bottoms on, reading the newspaper and watching the news at the same time. He was our kingpin. He was our go-to person as kids, so you can imagine how we felt when he was diagnosed with a brain tumour. He was 76 years of age, and he was given months to live. My dad had been in the madness many times before. This was usually caused by me. But you can imagine when this happened, it took the madness to a whole new level. It was during that time, though, when my dad started to take stock of himself. Late one night after speaking, I popped in to see him. As soon as I walked through the front door, he said, "Son, can you help me find this blankety blank 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 God of yours?" I said, "I can." He said, "Have you helped many?" I said, "Yeah, just a few." I said, "Dad, I'm going to come back in the morning." So the next morning, I got in my car, drove to Salford, parked it in the street, walked across the road, put my key in the door, walked through the door, into the back room. We put a little single bed in the back room because we couldn't get him upstairs by now. I got him out of his bed, put him in his wheelchair, wheeled him through into the front room, the best room. Put him in his armchair, couldn't quite get his leg over the side because he wasn't well enough. And I knelt at the side of the armchair and I grabbed his arm and he grabbed my arm. I said, "Dad, I want you to pray this prayer with me." He looked me in the eye and he said, "Son, I love you." That's the one time my dad has ever said those words to me. That's not a criticism. He's a man's man. Men don't talk like that where he came from. He showed us that he loved us by being the man that he was. He didn't need to say it. He showed it. And then he said, "Son, I'm proud of you." That meant a lot to me. After all the hurt that I'd put him through when we lived down at Bespoke Nightclub for two. And then I said, "Dad, pray this prayer with me." That day, my dad prayed a prayer and he gave God consent to come in. You see, my dad took stock of himself. He thought about where he stood with God and he decided what to do. And then later on, I went round to help him find him. See, in the madness, you can take stock of yourself. What about you? Are you in some kind of madness? Whatever kind of madness that may be for you. And this is the time for you to take stock of yourself. Listen, God's instruction, the Bible says, if you look for him, you will find him. And it's often in the madness after taking stock of themselves when people do, just like me dad. But have you had enough? My girlfriend smiled and that's when she said it. Just another day in a madness, innit? In the madness, you can find strength for your struggle. In the madness, you can tap into abilities that are usable. In the madness, you can take stock of yourself. And number four, in the madness, you can change your lane. I'd been in the madness in Manchester, or Madchester, as it was called then, for 15 years. And then I changed my lane. By now, I split up with Lisa, and she'd sold the massive speakers that I'd made out of kitchen worktops when we lived in our Bespoke Nightclub for two. She sold them to a drug dealer called Digger. By this point in my life, I was so poor, I used to go to KFC to lick other people's fingers. I'd live in three hostels. I spent a year in one of those hostels. And then I got a little flat down, a little cul-de-sac, and I met three people throughout a 10-day period. One of them invited me to church. So I went. I've been to church three times before. To a baptism, to a wedding, and to nick the lead off the roof from Holy Angels just down the road from our house. I went into church. They were waving flags around, banging tambourines. It was like the opening of the Olympics. That these guys were all basket cases. I came in here to get away from people who were on drugs. It looks like Lisa are off it on drugs. The guy who was speaking said, "We believe in a God who can heal. Is there anybody in here who's got any issues?" I'm thinking, is he having a laugh? Got more issues than Vogue. If you want to be prayed for anything, come to the front. So I got out of my seat and I walked to the front with loads of attitude. "All right, Rev, what can I pray for?" Thinking, how long have you got? So I told him, I'm on 55 mils of methadone. I've been a heroin addict for 15 years. I says, but the main thing I need prayer for is that I hear voices. I suffer from amphetamine psychosis. He said, okay, I'll pray with you. He put his hand on my head and thinking, what's he touching me for? I thought, I better just roll with it because I'm in his gaff. Got my eyes closed. And he started to pray. And as he prayed, I had a light bulb moment. Something happened. That was when I changed my lane. Because I walked into that building, a drug addict, and I walked out of the same building, a public speaker, seeing the madness. You can change your lane. Listen, 2,000 years ago, 2,000 miles away, God became a man. His name is Jesus. Jesus is God with skin on. And he came to this earth and he was tempted just like you, but he resisted temptation. And at the age of 33, he allowed himself to be nailed to a cross. On that day, they hung him there naked. It was madness. On that day, they laughed at him. It was madness. On that day, they shouted abuse at him. It was madness. On that day, they spat on him. It was madness. But he went through all that for you. See, he died on the cross to pay the price for your faults, your flaws, and your failures. He died on that cross so that he can wipe your slate clean. And when you give him consent to come in, that's when you can change your lane. But you need to give him consent to come in. I'm a full-time speaker, as Lee mentioned. I'm all over the UK is my parish. I go nowhere other than the UK. Said no recently to invitations to Italy, Spain, Pathos. You know, when you check your integrity. So I focus on the UK, and once I was speaking for the weekend in Derbyshire. Okay, might not be Spain, might not be Pathos, but that's my mission field. So you can imagine I get to stay in a lot of hotels. In fact, this is local for me. I'm speaking in Rotherham tonight. That's local as well, because I'm going to be sleeping on my own bed tonight. And I slept on my own bed last night. But for half of my working year, that's not the case. I live in hotels. And I'm okay with that. So this particular time, I was in Derbyshire. And it was a nice hotel. My room was really small, but it was a nice hotel. That's fine. And the door was right next to my bed. Early hours one morning, I got up to go to the bathroom. It's pitch black. And I'm fishing around, half asleep, for a door handle. And I find the door handle, opens it, walks out, and I realise that I'd stepped into the corridor outside my room. And as I look round, my door closed behind me. Oh no! I've locked myself out of my room! And I've only got my shorts on! So I go to the reception downstairs. The shutter was down. Not 24 hour. Not a soul around. Still half asleep. So I go to the front door of the hotel, and there's like a little building just outside the front door, and there's a light on in this window. I thought, well, they might be in there. So I go outside the front door of the hotel, knocks on the window, and then I hear the door of the hotel close behind me as well. So here I am now. I'm not telling you where in Derbyshire this hotel is, by the way. Keep it very vague. It's a big place. So there I am now, stood outside the hotel. It's winter. It's been raining. The ground is all gravelly. I've got nothing on my feet. With just my shorts on. I grabbed the handle of the door and I pushed it. No way. 2 o'clock in the morning. I'm going to have to stand here and wait for ages until somebody comes to give me a key card so that I can get in. And I thought, sack that. So I grabbed the handle again and I pushed and pulled it. And it was one of those magnetic type locks. So it sprang open. Whew. So I can get into the hotel, but where am I going to sleep? So I go to the first floor. It was only like 2 or 3 floors. It was only a small hotel. And there was a door, meeting room. So I opened the door of the meeting room, and it was set up for a business meeting the next day, like horseshoe shape. And there was a little wooden bench at the bottom of the meeting room, about 1.5 meters long. I thought, I'll have to sleep on that. So I take all the cups and saucers off the coffee table that's been set up for the meeting, gets the tablecloth to use as a blanket. It's winter, no heating on. Goes down to this wooden bench, lies on this bench. My legs are hanging off one end. My head's dropping off the other. No way did I sleep that night. I literally lay there and watched it get light. And then I heard a bit of a commotion downstairs. Somebody's at the reception. So I goes downstairs wrapped with this tablecloth around me, and there's a woman opening up the shutter. Now open. I said, love, I've just slept upstairs in the meeting room. She said, you were lucky. It's usually locked. I'm thinking, lucky? I've just slept on a little wooden bench using this tablecloth as a blanket, and it cost me 55 quid. Lucky, that's one way of putting it. As mad as this was, the next day when I was sat in my room, I thought, do you know, that's just like us and God, that. See, in a way, we are all like the hotel. God is outside and he wants to come in. But he will never grab the handle to try to push and pull his way in. No, instead, he stands and waits until he gets a key card. John in the Bible says that God stands at the door. You see, he doesn't push, he doesn't pull, he stands at the door. See, God will never try and force his way into your life. No, instead, he waits for you to give him the key card. He waits for you to give him consent. And when you can give him, and when you give him consent to come in, that's when you can change your lane. See, in the madness, you can change your lane, but have you had enough? I'm going to finish by taking us back to that night in the madness when we were in a bespoke nightclub for two in Manchester. I thought I heard somebody shouting across from another block. So I grabbed my pickaxe handle, steamed out, smashed the window, and there was nobody there. Came running back down to the flat. I said, at least there was nobody there. I know I told you that before. I sat back down on my pub stool that I cut the legs off to make it look oriental. And with my head sandwiched between my two massive speakers, I turned the house music right up. See, for me, this was just another day in the madness. But it's not just me who's been in the madness in this room, is it? It's all of us. Please stand. No going outside for a smoke just yet. Lee. Listen up. No music just yet, thanks. I'll just give me a moment. Listen up. Listen up. Right now, God is stood outside your life and he wants to come in. He's waiting for you to give him the key card. He's waiting for you to give him consent. But the question is for you is, have you had enough? I'm going to pray a prayer. And I'm going to invite two groups of people to pray this prayer with me. The first group are those people. You've never prayed a prayer before where you've given God consent to come in. It could be that you're attending this church or another church and you've been enjoying the music and the messages and meeting people, and that's great. Keep doing that, but that is not it. What is it? You knowing God for yourself, knowing God, giving him consent to come in. So he flicks the switch and then you do the church thing and that's part of it. But if you have never prayed a prayer, you've never given God consent to come in, do this now. Do it now. It could be that you've been brought by a friend or a family member. You didn't know what to expect. And you're thinking like I was thinking when I first went to church, these guys are all basket cases. But what happened to me? Pray this prayer and see what happens. Give God consent to come in. It could be that you're an husband of a wife or a wife of an husband and you're coming here to please your other half. Well done. What about you? What about you? Have you given God consent to come in? Don't leave it to... My dad died 3 days after I prayed with him. 3 days after. Where is he now? He's sat in his armchair with his tracky bottoms on. Waiting for sport to start on a Sunday afternoon. First group of people, those people you've never prayed a prayer before. Pray this prayer, give God consent to come in. He stood outside the door, he needs your key card. The second group of people, those people you've prayed a prayer. You know God, you're on that Christian journey, but you know right now at this point on your journey, you're not cutting it. Listen, the Bible says there's no condemnation. As I mentioned before, we're under grace. It's grace, but pray this prayer, reconnect with God. And God will forgive and forget whatever's going on in the madness in your life right now. And as you leave this place, you can just crack on with the rest of your Christian journey. It's like a new start for you. They're the two groups of people who are going to pray this prayer with me. And everybody else, you make up the third group. You're going to pray it to encourage the first group and the second group. Are we ready? All three groups, repeat after me. And may I say this first, park your pride outside. Don't let your pride get in the way. Is that your door? He wants to come in. He wants your key card. Are we ready? Repeat after me, phrase by phrase. Dear God, I come to you today and I admit that I'm not perfect. God, I ask that you forgive me for all my faults, for all my flaws, and for all my failures. God, I ask that you wipe my slate clean, because right here, right now, I'm giving you my key card. I'm giving you consent to come in, because I want to change my lane. And God, I'm saying, I've had enough. While our heads are bowed and are looking around, if you pray that prayer, you're part of the first group or the second group. I want you to raise your hand as quickly as you can so I can see it. Put your hands up, keep your hands raised, keep your hands raised, keep your hands raised. Keep your hands raised. You've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Put your hands down. 7 people, you've raised your hands. You don't need to raise them again. I'm going to count down for 5 seconds. And as I count down 5 seconds, it's giving the rest of you who's prayed that prayer. The 7 you put your hands up, that's fine. You don't need to raise them again. But the rest of you, you've prayed that prayer. You've given God consent to come in, or you've done it to reconnect with him. As I count down 5 seconds, it's giving you 5 extra seconds just to raise your hand, just so I can see it. There's a reason why we do this. It certainly isn't about putting you on the spot. I'll explain in a moment why. So, anybody else prayed the prayer as I count down? 5. You're part of the first group or the second group. Got 1 at the back. Another 2. Anybody else? Another 3. Anybody else as I count down? As I count down, 4. Anybody else? 3. Anybody else? 2. Got another one. Yeah, another one here. Fantastic. Anybody else prayed that prayer? You're part of the first group or the second group? 2. Anybody else? 1. We've got 11 or 12 in total. I'm going to count to 3. On the point of 3, the music's going to play. All those people who's raised your hands, I want you to leave your seats on the point of 3, not just yet. You're going to go through that door. Someone's going to meet you at the door. They're going to take you to a room. As a charity, we've produced a DVD called What's Next? What do you do next after praying that prayer? Well, we're going to give you a DVD. We're going to give you a book to read, wrote by my friend Jay John, and someone from the church is going to chat. But it's important that you do this. If you prayed the prayer but you didn't raise your hand, it's fine. You can still go through the door. But there's 11, maybe 12 of you.